Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. The city's plan to address a nearly $1 billion budget gap next year. And a last-minute attempt to keep the controversial gunshot detection system ShotSpotter before the contract expires. And now to some of today's top stories. The man accused of an apparent assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump appeared in a Florida courtroom. 58-year-old Ryan Wesley Routh is being charged with two gun-related crimes. It's believed he'd camped outside the Trump International Golf Course for nearly 12 hours with food and a rifle before a Secret Service agent confronted him and opened fire. Though no one was injured, this marks the second attempt on Trump's life in as many months. Routh is due again in court later this month. A panel of aldermen are voting to pay out nearly $15 million to settle four police misconduct lawsuits. This is after a federal jury last week ordered the city to pay $50 million to a man who was wrongfully convicted and spent 10 years in prison. Today, the mayor addressed what he calls the years of, quote, bad financial decisions and poor leadership at the police department, putting the city in this position.
We're, you know, commanders and superintendents and former state's attorneys. They were all involved in this ring that led to real harm against black and brown people. You know, so it's an element that we're going to have to continue to unpack because these payouts, quite frankly, are a form of reparations.
Members of the City Council Finance Committee today expressed concern over the continuously escalating cost of payouts for such cases. A WTTW News analysis shows the city paid nearly $385 million in police misconduct settlements between 2019 and 2023. In an effort to root out the culture of corruption in Chicago and Illinois politics, federal prosecutors are offering a get-out-of-jail-free card of sorts. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois is launching a pilot program allowing some white-collar nonviolent criminals the chance to come forward, telling investigators what they know without fear of criminal prosecution. Prosecutors say for the next 6 months, private or government workers who have participated in or know about criminal wrongdoing because of their jobs can fess up, but be prepared to tell investigators everything you know. The pilot starts just days before former Alderman Ed Burke is set to begin his prison term for corruption-related charges. But not everyone is eligible. For more on who is or is not, please visit our website. And the music community is mourning the death of Jackson 5 member and rock and roll Hall of Famer Tito Jackson. His sons posted the news on Instagram saying, quote, "Our father was an incredible man who cared about everyone and their well-being. Please remember to do what our father always preached, and that is love one another." Tito was the third of nine Jackson children, including superstars Michael and Janet. The Jackson 5 became a 1970s sensation under the guidance of their father, Joe, with hits like ABC and I'll Be There. We spoke with Tito Jackson at his childhood home in Gary, Indiana, back in 2021.
We're from the same streets that you're from. We had a dream. We wanted to be stars. We worked hard to be stars. And today we accomplished our dreams, you know, and we accomplished them well. So saying that being said, that says that you can be anything you want. Just put in the work and really want it, and it'll start to develop for you.
Jackson reportedly died of a heart attack. He was 70 years old. Up next, how the city's budget forecast could impact you. Chicago's budget director joins us right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago is facing a $223 million budget gap this year. But that's not all. City is also projecting a nearly $1 billion budget shortfall in the 2025 fiscal year. City officials have since issued a hiring freeze, as well as limits to travel and some overtime in an effort to right the fiscal ship. But there are still gaps that need to be filled. Mayor Brandon Johnson says the challenges the city currently faces are significant, that sacrifices will be made, and the gap underscores the need for strategic decisions. Here to talk more about those strategic decisions is Annette Guzman, budget director for the City of Chicago. Welcome to Chicago Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So Mayor Brandon Johnson has blamed the structural problems with Chicago's finances for the projected $982 million budget gap next year. Did the Johnson administration do enough to prepare for this moment, since it was predicted a year ago?
You know, I think that, you know, we've done a number of things since coming into office. One, when we first got in, we had 4 months to create a budget before it had to be passed by City Council. But since that time, in January, beginning this year, we did start to look at our expenditures to better understand, you know, where our expenditures were going, also where our revenues were coming in. We project out month after month. We prepare reports to our City Council, to the public, to understand how are we achieving against our budget. And so as we saw our revenues starting to come in a little bit softer this year, we started to contract on our expenditures, which is why in our budget forecast, we forecasted that we would spend at least $200 million less than what we budgeted for this year. And that was because of what we were seeing in the revenues. One thing that we didn't anticipate that came to us a little bit later in the year was the non-receipt of a very critical revenue source that we used to support our pension obligations. And so once that became even more evident that that wasn't something that we 100% knew was going to come, we started to restrict our expenditures even further.
And what have the conversations between the city and CPS been like with regards to that pension payment that the school district has opted not to pay?
So, you know, we continue to have conversations with CPS and the Board of Education, because as much as we commit to supporting our workers who've, you know, put in their blood and sweat and tears and spent years in city service and in CPS service, we want to make sure that we are making good on that commitment. With the Board of Education shifting away from one that's mayorally controlled to one that's elected, we have to start the shift towards CPS being able to support their costs independent of the city's resources. And so those conversations have been about how do we make sure that we are working together to ensure that our schools have the resources they need, that we're talking at both the federal level and the state level in support of our colleagues at CPS to ensure that they have those resources. We're still in conversations. As I've said many times to people, we still expect the payment to be made, but at the time that the forecast comes out, we have to be honest about what we know at that time. And at that time, CPS had created a budget that did not include that payment.
For next year, if the problem is structural, what kind of changes are necessary to prevent deficits from happening year after year?
Yeah, I think, you know, you asked me earlier, what have we been doing since we got into office if we knew that this was coming? You know, one of the things that we've been doing is really looking at department budgets, really looking at how our contracts are structured, looking at what projects were in place that, you know, were approved under former administrations, that we have to ask ourselves, are these still important? Are these still critical projects that have to move forward? If they have to move forward, do they move forward in the same way that they were originally proposed? You know, and we're also having very serious conversations about what are the revenue sources that we need to support the work going forward. The mayor has been very transparent that, you know, he's always going to be putting forth revenue proposals in front of City Council, the ones that he thinks are necessary, the ones that he thinks are reasonable. To make sure that the services that the city provides, and these are critical services that the city does provide, can continue on into the future.
The mayor has, you know, vowed to minimize the impact on city services and programs in the workforce, but of course, the city has also expressed that sacrifices will have to be made, instituting the hiring freeze citywide. How much will those steps actually help towards getting you where you need to be?
They're already helping, you know, in being very intentional about what hiring can continue through this year. We've immediately seen those savings. Every day we see those savings because they aren't being spent on personnel. And so we work really closely with our departments to understand, like, what critical services and what critical needs or what emergency needs will go unmet if we don't allow a specific position to be hired into. Those are the conversations we're having directly, especially with our public safety departments. I work and I talk very frequently with CPD, with our emergency management office, with our fire department, to ensure that we can continue to provide those services and that we are not creating gaps for the safety of our residents.
What other solutions or immediate solutions are on the table for now?
We're looking at critical projects as well as, projects that we might be doing with our space needs. Or do we need to move forward with changing our spaces right now and building more offices, things like that? We're also looking at what costs are that we can hedge against, right? So what energy costs seem to be higher? How do we reduce our energy consumption to ensure that we can still save on those costs? We're looking at IT projects that we had, great And we wanted to make sure that those things got done, but they're coming in slower than we thought they were going to come. And so are those projects that are needed to move forward this year, can they be delayed even further, but still not impact the ability to provide city services?
How long do you anticipate this hiring freeze might last? And what impact might that have on some of your departments and the services they provide?
So right now, the hiring freeze is in place until the end of the year. If things change with some of our revenue sources, that could have an impact on whether or not the hiring freeze continues through the end of this year. But I want to be really clear, we have to understand where our budget for next year is going to, because the last thing we would want to do is to hire into a position and then not have the resources to support that next year, or even long term. So we're having those critical conversations with our departments. What are the things that we need to have in place to make sure that we provide the basic services that we are required to provide, that the city has come to expect of government, and what things were, we might have to delay that because our resources are not sufficient to match, our ambitions.
Now, the mayor in this instance, he has not ruled out increasing property taxes, though he campaigned on that and saying that he would not do that. But other than property tax increases, how could the city create or generate revenue to help fill this gap?
Sure. I'm glad you asked that question. So, right now, our main funding source for most of our operations is our corporate fund. Our corporate fund is actually supporting a lot of operations that actually sit on other funds as well. And so we're looking at a number of things to ensure are our fees properly calibrated to support the cost of the service that they're providing, because the corporate fund right now is supporting that, because they are, some of them might be a lot lower. They may have not changed in 20, 30 years, where the cost of those services have obviously changed over the last 30 years. We're having conversations at the state level about resources and revenues that we think will help actually get us over the long term to more structural balance. And so those are the conversations that we think will have much more long-term impact to help us get to a place where our resources are meeting the services that we provide.
And of course, you'll have to convince 26 out of 50 Alder people to vote in favor to support the mayor's budget in October. Tell us a little bit about what's next and what challenges you anticipate with getting aldermen on board.
Yeah, 26 is a high bar. It's not impossible, but we know that they have ambitions, they have desires to see things happening within their wards and within the city writ large. And so those are conversations that we're having right now to truly understand how can we align those ambitions with what our resources provide for. A lot of our alders are really clear about the exercise. They're really clear about the challenge. And they know at the end of the day, there's certain things that the city must do and has to provide, because we're the only ones that provide that service. And so I think that we'll focus on, what is it that we're preserving within this budget that we know is critical and that your constituents look to the city to provide? What are the things that we can start to continue to shift our budget to support that are also really important to the people that live in their wards as well?
Okay, you've got your work cut out for you. Annette Guzman, City of Chicago Budget Director, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Up next, last-ditch efforts at City Hall to keep a controversial police tool. We discuss the pros and cons right after this. The city's contract with a gunshot detection system known as ShotSpotter is coming to a close. And while the technology's days appear to be numbered, some city council members are making a final push to reverse Mayor Brandon Johnson's move to cancel the controversial system, whether the mayor agrees or not.
$100 million for a walkie-talkie on a pole. And the reason why they said we needed it was to reduce gun violence. It didn't do that. So, you know, it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that the investments that we're making, they have to get at the problem.
Joining us are Alderman William Hall of the 6th Ward on the city's south side, and joining us via Zoom, Alderman Peter Chico of the 10th Ward on the city's southeast side. Alderman, thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Alderman Chico, starting with you, please. The mayor announced this plan back in February. What can be done at this point to prevent him from shutting down ShotSpotter?
Well, we have a vote coming up, and we plan on bringing it to city council to include all 50 aldermen to have their voice heard in this ShotSpotter technology. What I can say is my residents in the 10th Ward have made it clear to me they want ShotSpotter to stay. And when I'm talking to my colleagues, their residents feel the same way.
Alderman Hall, does your colleague have anything to stand on here? Can the mayor unilaterally make the call to close out ShotSpotter, or should city council have a say?
Well, essentially, at the end of the day, this contract is expired. Secondly, this is a political toy, in my opinion, that's dangerous. The data that I look at and I recognize and respect is a 13-year-old child who laid in the street for an hour dead. Go bring that narrative to that mother who still does not know who the killer is. And if it wasn't for Spencer Leak paying for the funeral, Daryl Smith getting the obituaries, and myself, you eulogizing at New Covenant Reverend Thurston's church, that was all I needed to know, that this is not effective. An hour in the street, dead, and a mother having to go hold her child. So, and again, is the objective justice? Is the objective to take guns off the street and keep repeat offenders behind bars? That's what Chicagoans need. This technology does not lend to that. Just to have an alert when someone shoots is not effective enough. And the reason why residents right now are saying keep it, do whatever is necessary, is because of the traumatic experiences residents have felt for years in the city of Chicago with no assistance, no support to get guns off the street, lock up those who are killing, and keep repeat offenders from coming and terrorizing neighborhoods.
Alderman Chico, what recourse do you all have? What methodology can you all use to keep ShotSpotter around?
Well, let me first address my colleague's comments. Experience matters. I have the experience. I'm the only member of the city council who has actually dealt with ShotSpotter, who's actually used it on a day-to-day basis. It does work. It does save lives. When I was patrolling out there in the 4th District at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's 20 below out in December, and shots go off, let me tell you something. Nobody is calling the police. But ShotSpotter alerts the police. We get there quicker. We're able to render aid to the victim and get them to the hospital more quickly. ShotSpotter does work, and it's saving lives each and every day. I've seen it as a police officer in the 4th District working the streets.
Alderman Chico, the mayor says that the technology, in that same press conference where we just heard the soundbite earlier, he says the technology promised to cut gun violence in the city of Chicago by 50%, but that it hasn't done that. And he feels like he can't continue to justify the $100 million the city has spent on it thus far. What do you say to that?
I say, let's talk to the families of the victims who have been shot. I have had several of them come up to me since the ShotSpotter debate has really taken the forefront, and they said, we need ShotSpotter. You know why? Because nobody called when my son or daughter was shot, and ShotSpotter alerted the police, and they got there in a timely manner to get to the hospital. Those are real stories. Those are real people. And if you want to put a price tag on saving somebody's life, by all means, go ahead, but I'm not willing to do that.
Alderman Hall, you disagree, of course, on the cost and the use of ShotSpotter.
Well, three things I disagree with. Number one, why are other cities leaving this, right? Why is it that when we look at San Antonio, they're done? Houston is trying to get out of the contract right now. Portland and others have said enough is enough. This company hasn't provided any sufficient job growth. It has not developed a pipeline for STEM for our students. And again, this company is being ran out of the state. And so the thing that I have to say is $100 million no-bid contract is bad business that this mayor inherited from a previous administration. administration. When I look at community policing networks, I look at Commander Courts, I look at Commander Tate, I look at Commander Branch. Those three commanders in the 6th Ward, what we have done is geofence the hottest crime areas. Their presence, working with officers, getting overtime, has reduced crime. We've seen the effectiveness. And then to that end, when we look at the equipment that the police need, we need to give them effective equipment. We just got a new helicopter as a result of, again, the DNC, and those are things that outdated equipment. I do not disagree under no circumstances with my colleague. I love him dearly about the effectiveness. As much as he showed up to scenes, I've also showed up to funerals. That 13-year-old boy a year ago that laid in the street for an hour, no one showed up. A mother found this child, and we had to come together to bury this child. That's all the data that I need to know that it is not as effective as it's being sold. And a no-bid $100 million contract is a dangerous type of business. And I think that this political prostitution has to stop because Chicago is not to be pimped out.
And to be clear, the 13-year-old boy that you're referring to
is in the 6th Ward.
There was no ShotSpotter alert.
Alert went off, and only an hour later did someone show up. And so when we talk about the effectiveness...
So there was a ShotSpotter alert.
Inconsistencies across the board has been a problem with ShotSpotter. Again, to say when someone is shooting and have the community not be empowered, have the community not working with the police, have the community not involved in beat meetings, we need to, first of all, renew the trust with community. Once community is empowered, Block Club at a time, then ShotSpotter won't be the dependencies of communities because they will allow a computer to do it before the police because they are tired of not being respected and received. But Superintendent Snelling has change that in less than a year.
Now, Chicago police say that their data shows that roughly 75% of ShotSpotter alerts have no corresponding 911 call. So that means they are being alerted to calls that they would not have learned about through 911. Does ShotSpotter not help to bring officers to the scene faster or alert them to shootings that no one called about, according to the TPD data?
ShotSpotter alerted an hour later, a mother finds her child dead. That's stories that are not being told consistently throughout neighborhoods that have this equipment. Again, this equipment came no bid, no comparison to other datas. And again, let's have the conversation with the other four mayors that are ridding themselves of this equipment. Again, to alert when someone is shooting and not have the evidence to lock up the person with the gun, to keep the repeat offender off the streets, and to make sure that our streets are safe, that's the equipment that we need. CTA is looking at using AI technology that identifies shooter and gun at the same time. And so, again, to have alert systems without effective judicial system support and empowered communities is what we're looking for. This does not do that. And again, my question is, where are the jobs? Where's the connection to community? Where's the STEM training? And where's the sustainability? That's dangerous to do it without no one else.
Alderman Chico, there's also the concern that ShotSpotter lends itself to the over-policing of Black and brown communities. What do you say to that?
I say... That's nonsense. With my experience being out there, when ShotSpotter detects a shot, the police are going to go to that location where the shot rang off at. Instead of going around the whole block looking for people to stop, they're going to go right to that location, right to that address where ShotSpotter alerted the police officers to go. If they see nobody out there, they see nobody out there. But that's better than them going around the block looking for anybody else who weren't in close proximity to the shots being fired. When the shots are being fired without ShotSpotter, we don't know where they come from. A 911 caller can say, I just heard the shots go off. And what direction? They don't know what direction it's coming from. ShotSpotter directs our police officers directly to the spot. And one more thing, responding to my colleague's comments about me arriving at scenes and him going to the funerals, we're trying to avoid going to funerals by having ShotSpotter set up and getting the police there on time, in a timely manner, to then call 911, to call the ambulance and send them to a hospital.
Alderman Chico, have you been given any indication that, A, the city has been in touch with ShotSpotter, or that ShotSpotter would be willing to work out some sort of a ward-by-ward contract, if that were even possible technologically?
As of now, I speak to ShotSpotter frequently. I do not know of any of that.
Okay. Alderman Hall, briefly, what, you know, without ShotSpotter, what technological alternatives are there?
Well, again, like I said, we're looking at AI on CTA that identifies shooter, gun. And again, we don't want to broadcast what we're working on. That's how criminals get ahead. But one thing I do know is when the DNC came, we saw discourse, but we saw safety at its best. And so I do have confidence in Superintendent Snelling and the mayor finding the best equipment to keep Chicago safe. But okay, a unilateral $100 million deal ain't the way.
Yeah, okay. You're not a fan of that. Alderman Hall, Alderman Chico, thanks to you both for joining
us.
We appreciate it. And to be clear, we know that the two of you are friends. You get along great. That is our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. A top aide in Mayor Johnson's administration apologizes for using an anti-police slur. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and more. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.